It's the first week of May 2026, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are tuned to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, 95.9 FM, and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm your host, Roxana, and this time we are getting real, because it seems to be getting harder and harder to know what is real and what isn't. So in the name of reality, I have a Desert Oracle Radio episode for you from April 30th, 2021. From Ken Lane, here is Try Not to Die.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. How's everybody doing out there? This night in the arid American West. I'm kind of in a daze, so if you're looking for an episode of this radio show to dissuade you from recommending it to others, this is the one. Because I'm about 24 hours into the second Pfizer vaccine shot. And all I can think about is my old Zune, all my old favorite songs, watching videos on my Surface tablet, thinking about favorite operating systems of the past, Bob, Vista, and wondering if I should have taken the advice of a nice lady at the temporary worker agency many decades ago, which was, get your XP certification. I've been outside and it's all just a little confusing. This one rock squirrel has been doing something strange with one of the solar lights out under a Joshua tree. I notice they treat you a little differently when you come for your second shot, with a little more sympathy. Because you're in a good mood, you know? It's done. Not one and done. But it's done. And you are thinking about all the fun you're going to have. Like, I'm gonna get in the truck and go to every state where everything's open. I'm gonna go to that modern American art museum that the Waltons built in some holler in Arkansas. I'm gonna go take a long tour of the West Texas oil fields. The world is our oyster. But maybe not today. today is a day or night, whatever it is, to spend with a very special, close, personal friend named NyQuil. Oh, but I can still read. I can still read out of my own book. Just about every day, somebody comments or emails or sends a card or a letter asking when the audiobook of Desert Oracle Volume 1 is going to be available for listening, purchase, etc. You're going to have to write to our publisher, MCD Books in New York City, and ask them, as I've been asking. I guess I need one of those high-powered agents. Whenever I'm looking through Twitter or something, it seems like every other person has a represented by so-and-so in their Twitter bio. But as none of them have published any books, you have to wonder what exactly is being represented. Now, this is something that I originally wrote for Stephen Biller at Palm Springs Life magazine a couple of years ago. It's an introduction for visiting the wilder parts of the Mojave. It's called Try Not to Die. It wasn't supposed to go like this. Wasn't the plan at all. The plan was to get out of town for a few days and explore the desert, fill up the Instagram feed with abandoned gas stations and cracked asphalt two lanes snaking through forest of Joshua trees. Beers at a roadhouse, impulse buys at a little shop on Highway 62. A night under the stars from the safety of an Airbnb hot tub or a campfire ring. And now it's a late summer day, well over 100 degrees, not a stylish swimming pool or outdoor cocktail bar in sight. You've been sitting in the car, the doors flung open, the burning air wrapped around you, suffocating and dense and so very dry. An empty cardboard coffee cup and the drink holder, an empty plastic water bottle crumpled under the seat. It is midday. Which means in 7 or 8 hours, the ball of orange fire in the sky will finally sink behind the mountains and the temperature will sink down to 95 degrees or so, if you're lucky. Something gave out. The gas in the tank or the city tires or the transmission or maybe the rear axle. Snapped in two by a boulder partially buried in the sand on this godforsaken dirt road you never meant to be on. Never consciously chose to take at all. The voice of the navigation robot was as sure as ever. Turn right at the gas station. Even though there was little left of that particular gas station. And the road itself was forlorn and untroubled by recent tire tracks. There was something you were headed for, an art exhibit on the open desert, a historic mining site, a location from a television show you remembered. Maybe a sweeping view of a national monument. It doesn't matter now. Unless you write it down, nobody will ever know why you wound up dead on a rough, sandy track that could charitably be called a Jeep trail. Even if they find your remains, which might not happen for years, your personal story will not be told. Maybe there will be a little news article somewhere. Human remains found hours from nearest settlement, that kind of thing. If anybody remembers you, maybe they will clip it out of the newspaper. Bookmark the website page. You had so much life left to live, so many things you never got around to doing. And now all you're going to do is become a sun-baked skeleton picked over by vultures and ants. One bony hand stretched out ahead. Maybe at the end you thought you were almost home. The Mojave Desert covers much of Southern California and a bit of the neighboring states, Southern Nevada, the Arizona Strip, the bottom corner of Utah. Before this dried-out expanse of burnt chocolate mountains and blinding playas and lonely roads became beautiful in the eyes of the beautiful people, it was something to endure on the way to Las Vegas or the Colorado River. Or something to survive on the way to whatever was luring you to the West Coast. There were always desert rats, always the antisocial sort who looked at this punishing landscape and felt right at home. The romantics. The people who required a weird backdrop to fit their personal movie. But there were never enough of them to fill many hotel rooms or vacation rentals, and so the desert was mostly ignored. Unless the steady jobs of the Los Angeles Basin were in commuting distance. Or unless a corporation gets a hold of some government desert land to use for giant solar towers or windmills or a gold mine. Or some insane scheme to pump the groundwater from the Mojave to Orange County, the desert interior consists of unfenced national parks and national monuments with no unauthorized entry, military bases, and massive blocks of nearly untouched wilderness filling the map between the Sierra Nevada, Las Vegas, and the urban sprawl of Southern California. Luckily for those who love this wild desert in its natural state, over the past 100 years, a few visionaries were able to set aside much of this landscape as an immense desert preserve that rivals anything on Earth in size. Million protected acres of the Great Mojave Wilderness from the tip of Death Valley National Park to San Gorgonio within the new Sand to Snow National Monument. Most visitors stay close to Joshua Tree National Park today, and especially to its well-traveled sightseeing spots and tourist traps. If you get a flat tire or a dead battery on the Park Boulevard loop between 29 Palms and the unincorporated village of Joshua Tree, a friendly ranger will come along before too long. And if your Airbnb turns out to be a lightly redecorated meth shack without a working toilet, you can always drive to a motel. get lost on a remote trail or break down off the highway, and you're going to have a very different experience. Maybe you'll survive. And maybe you'll become part of our rich local history of lost tourists. We add a few names to this roster every summer, if the names are known. But maybe you're not ready to be on this list of people the Mojave chewed up and spit out. Maybe you have plans. Plans that require coming home without the aid of a black vinyl body bag. The good news is that the Gospel of Desert Survival is short, simple, and easy to remember. Number one, water. And lots of it. Maybe you can dig up some sandy, alkaline water from the damp edge of a wash, if you're lucky enough to be there just after a good soaking, which is unlikely. Maybe you can build a solar still if you happen to drive around with science project supplies. Or maybe you can bash open a barrel cactus, but it's best to leave that to the bighorn sheep, who don't get sick from the bitter mush within. Why not just carry plenty of water and not worry about your Eagle Scout technique? When you're at the grocery store buying whiskey and marshmallows for the campfire, fill up the extra space in the shopping cart with cheap plastic jugs of water. $10 worth of gallon jug water in the trunk can significantly raise the odds of surviving your Mojave ordeal. And please recycle the plastic jugs once you're rescued. Number two, don't waste that phone charge. Of course, you've got a car charger. So make sure your phone is charged up and don't run it down looking at Instagram. You're already in the scenic desert. And while there are plenty of remote spots without any cell coverage in much of the Mojave, you can get a cell signal even if you've got to walk up a hill first. But don't try this at high noon in August. Number three, do not walk in the heat of the day. If it's already hot when you start your day hike, it's going to be unbearable on the way back. Especially at Amboy Crater and Mojave Trails National Monument, where four day hikers have perished since 2017. In the summer heat, dawn and dusk are the only times you want to be headed out for an easy walk. And if you're stuck with your car somewhere, it's best to stay put rather than walk into that inferno. Number four, a broken down car is your friend. Your vehicle can be seen from a distance. It's bigger than you are. The glass and the mirrors and the shiny paint reflect light, and is probably already on some kind of road or trail. Stay on the shady side when the sun's beating down. Number five, call for help before it's too late. When an Orange County couple got lost on a midday walk around Amboy Crater in June of 2018, Kathy Barber managed to call 911. But Barber and her partner were already dead when the sheriff's helicopter found them. Number six, watch where you step and where you reach. The best way to avoid a rattlesnake bite is to avoid stepping on or grabbing a rattlesnake. And they're out now. To avoid black widow bites and scorpion stings, don't put your hands where you can't see them. And leave those old army surplus snake bite kits at home. Doctors say slicing up your flesh with a razor blade does far more harm than good. Just get to any desert hospital where antivenom is available. Number 7. Flash, floods, kill. The most reliable way to die in the desert is to drive your car into floodwaters blocking a roadway. This is as deadly in downtown Palm Springs as it is in the Mojave Wilderness. And no matter how comfortable that shady wash looks on a hot day in monsoon season, remember that churning torrents of mud, boulders, dead cows, and floodwaters can come rolling down from dozens of miles away. Number 8. Check out the condition of your car, your rental RV, your car share Prius, whatever you're relying on to get you back to civilization. Make sure your tires are evenly inflated and have enough tread for a road trip. Is your spare tire functional? Do you have enough coolant in the reservoir? How about engine oil? And don't forget, a full tank of gas. Service stations are few and far between. Number 9. Tell someone who cares. Heading off to the desert wilds? Type a message to the people who care about you, the ones who care whether you live or die. And tell the desk staff at your hotel or your vacation rental host or the rangers at your campground. Sign the trail registers, leave a note on the dashboard if you're heading away from your vehicle. The more clues for the rescuers, the more likely they'll find you while you're still breathing. Number 10. Maybe don't go rock climbing alone. Crawling up boulders has become a popular pastime despite the well-established effects of gravity and routine deaths and critical injuries from falls getting wide coverage. In May 2018, New Zealander Claire Nelson fell 15 feet from a boulder in Joshua Tree National Park and spent 4 terrifying days on the ground with a shattered hip before rescuers went looking for her. If you must try rock climbing, do so with a buddy. Oh, and Claire Nelson's book, What I Learned from Falling, is coming out now in the United States. Number 11, choose your buddy carefully. In the sweltering summer of 2017, a 20-year-old Orange County resident went to Joshua Tree to celebrate her birthday with her ex-boyfriend. Just 2 miles from the Maze Loop parking lot where their vehicle was found, her ex-boyfriend shot her through the skull with his .40-caliber semi-automatic pistol, which he had carried, loaded, on a short day hike in a national park. Then he turned the gun on himself. Number 12. Finally, if all else fails and your time is at hand, know that most people relax at the end. Find a place to sit down in the shade, if there's any shade. None of us live forever, and not enough of us get the time to sit alone in the quiet wilderness and contemplate our own existence and our place in the world. There are some friendly desert tips for anyone who finds himself out in the desert. Whether you live here, whether you're visiting, whether you just woke up out here. which happens more often than we like to admit. So enjoy your time out here, regardless of your circumstances. And enjoy these soundscapes from our own Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Tell you what, next time I'm gonna get the one and done. Next pandemic. I hope that's a long time away. From Amboy to Zyzix and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio. We broadcast from our home station, KCDZ 107.7 FM in Joshua Tree and the surrounding high desert. But you can hear it anytime on your podcast player. And you can hear us on select community radio stations across the United States. We don't have any wildflowers. The cactus are barely blooming. But that's what you get. The desert is not a botanical garden. It's not Disneyland. But it is a lot of things at once. A land of contrast, as they say. It is both a unique bioregion, a great wilderness protected by good people who work their whole lives for this very purpose. And it's also the far edge of the Los Angeles metropolitan area. The TV stations are from LA. The sports team stickers are all LA teams, often right next to the Go Back to LA bumper sticker. Those started popping up a year or so ago. I can't remember, in the pandemic. Well, next weekend might be a wild one, but for now, I'll say goodnight to all of you out there in the desert and beyond. And I'm going to go spend some quality time with a bottle of NyQuil. Thank you for listening. And good night from the Voice of the Desert.
That last part about precautions when getting out in the wilds applies here in our mountains too, don't you think? It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay, broadcasting on KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, and streaming at kgvm.org. Let's keep getting real. The other day, to feel a little more grounded, I listed some things that are real. The gunmetal blue flick of the spider wasp wing as she scurries across the gravel with her eight-legged prey. Eye contact with my friend. The anything helps sign held by the woman at the intersection. The sting of a bald-faced hornet. The pop-up breakfast table on Sunday mornings on the library lawn. The glacier lilies and dandelions that bloomed at the cabin this week. And with that, we will see the flower-loving bees and bumblebees showing up too. Have you heard about the Bumblebee Atlas Project? Well, last summer I met a wonderful woman at a workshop about taking part in this. And I got to talk with her again this week. I am going to have you introduce yourself. Could you tell us your name and your group and your designation within that group?
Yeah, my name is Michelle Toshak. I'm a conservation biologist with the Xerces Society, and I am in Livingston, Montana.
And couldn't you spell that for people that have never heard the word before?
Yeah, Xerces is a funny word. It's X-E-R-C-E-S.
And how or why did this group or project come to be?
Yeah, so across the U.S., there's still places that we don't have up-to-date information on bumblebees, and that's where community scientists can help. So the Bumblebee Atlas actually started in 2018 in the Pacific Northwest as a response to bee declines and a need for better data. So since then, it's grown. It's now active in 21 states. And what makes this project really special is that it's based on community science involvement. So that means that anyone can participate. So volunteers catch bumblebees, take a series of photos, and then release them. And then experts like myself identify them to species. So it doesn't harm the bees, and it's a really fun, hands-on way to contribute to conservation.
And how long have you been doing this?
Yeah, so the Montana Bumblebee Atlas launched in 2024, so we're heading into our third field season. The season kicks off May 15th, and this is actually our final year of statewide inventory before we transition into a long-term monitoring project for next year. So this is really a great time to get involved. You can really help build the foundation of what we know about bumblebees and the state.
Is data your basic purpose or goal, or is something going to be done with that data?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the data that gets submitted to our data portal, it's essentially photographs of bumblebees, and then there's additional information that we collect as well, including some habitat information and floral association. And all of that goes into a public database. So we work really closely with federal partners, state agency, local partners who are actively engaged in utilizing the data. And we hope to come up with some habitat guidance and some other management documents that can be used by our partners for on-the-ground conservation.
Can you tell me more about how all of that affects our environment or our community or our habitat health?
Yeah, absolutely. So bumblebees play a huge role in holding ecosystems together. So they pollinate wild plants as well as crops, foods like tomatoes, apples, and strawberries all depend on bee pollination. But it goes beyond just human food. So the plants that bees pollinate support wildlife, provide habitat, and form the base of entire food webs. Montana is especially important because we still have these large intact landscapes. So that makes Montana one of the best places in the country to understand what these healthy bumblebee communities look like and what we can do to help protect them.
Nice. And Michelle, are there any events coming up you'd like to tell us about, either online or in person around Montana?
Yeah, this is a great time to get involved. So we're currently welcoming new volunteers, and everyone starts with a short online training. So I'm hosting a live training webinar on Zoom on May 7th, and you can sign up at bumblebeeatlas.org under the events page. We also have in-person field trainings around the state, so you can learn alongside others and get comfortable with the process. Those are also posted on our events page.
Okay, and again, that's on, could you give the website again, please?
Yeah, it's bumblebeeatlas.org.
Great. And how can our listeners learn more or support your group?
Yeah, so if you enjoy being outside, whether that's hiking, gardening, or just noticing bees in your neighborhood, you would probably love this project. You don't need any experience. If you can take a photo, you can participate. So the best place to get started to learn more is by going to our website, bumblebeeatlas.org. That's where you can sign up, find trainings, and learn everything that you need to get started. And if you're not ready to commit to surveys, there's still a way that you can contribute. So let's say you're someone who loves taking photos of bumblebees, you notice them in your garden and in different places. You can submit those photos to bumblebeewatch.org. This is our data portal that we use, and these observations are incredibly valuable, especially for some of our rare species. And then the Xerces Society, which runs the Atlas, we're a nonprofit, so people can also support the work through membership through the Xerces Society.
I did meet you. I took one of your in-person workshops and learned so much about the bees, about the bumblebees. And also you taught us how to capture them and kind of make them docile by chilling them down a little bit, but it doesn't kill them. But I've been gun-shy to do that, and I'm hoping that this workshop on May 7th will kind of help me brush up on those techniques. And I'll just ask you, is that still required, or is just a photograph enough? And also the database, is it pretty easy to put your data into as a volunteer?
Yeah, so we do require that people go through a training if they want to participate as a Bumblebee Atlas volunteer. And the benefit for this type of data collection is that it's systematic, it's effort-based, it allows researchers to compare the data over time. So this just gives us a lot of ability to do high-quality research on bumblebees. But it does take a significant amount of time. There's a commitment to volunteer, and it goes through this process where you catch the bees, put them on ice, take a series of photographs. I just wanted to mention really quickly, since you mentioned some hesitation or some shyness, that this is a process that doesn't harm the bumblebees. And if done correctly, it's very unlikely to get stung by a bumblebee. So when they're on ice, they're immobile, they can't move, they can't sting. And part of our training, we walk you through very carefully the way to catch a bee, put it into a little container in a way that makes it very unlikely for you to get stung by a bumblebee. So I just like to emphasize that the process is safe for both people and for the bees. And once you practice it a little bit, you become quite confident, quite good at catching bees and letting them go.
Nice. Well, I'm going to try. And as far as the time commitment, it's just like anything you're volunteering with, the training is valuable, and that's what it's all about in my book is, is finding ways to help the environment through things like this.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, the other way to get involved, which I mentioned earlier, is just submitting those photographs to Bumblebee Watch. So this doesn't require you to put them on ice. You can just take photos of them on flowers, and that is a different type of data. We analyze it a little bit different, but it still is valuable. So there's different levels for people to get involved based on what they're interested in doing.
And is Bumblebee Watch under the umbrella of your group there?
The Xerces Society is part of Bumblebee Watch, but
Okay.
we have collaborators in Canada and across the US who also use the same portal. So it is bigger than just our project.
Ah, okay. And is it a separate website then? That's what I'm asking.
Yep, it's a
Oh.
separate website. You can search for it at Bumblebee Watch, and it's just bumblebeewatch.org is the
Okay,
website.
good to know. And is there anything that I did not ask about that you want to be sure that our listeners know?
Oh, I just wanted to answer the other part of your question too about the data submission. And so the process is fairly easy. So we send everyone out in the field with a data sheet. It's 2 pages, it's pretty simple. Basic observations of the habitat around you and the flowers found at the site, some really basic weather information. So you just fill it out in the field on the piece of paper, and then our data portal matches the data sheet exactly. So it's, step by step, walking through, going through entering the different fields. I think the hardest part about entering data is that you will likely have a ton of photographs of bumblebees. We encourage you to take lots of photos. So there's a little bit of time for you to organize the photos and decide which ones are the best to submit. But once those photographs get submitted, I will review every single photograph that gets submitted and identify it to species if I can.
Nice. And it would you like to share a meaningful personal experience that you've had in a wild place or while working on this project?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it makes me really happy that we met at the Native Plant Society conference last summer. And yeah, I have a story from that event actually, but I just the background of it is that we have a species of concern in Montana. It's called the Western Bumblebee. It's known to be in decline across its range, and it's a really striking bee. It has this bright white tip of the abdomen, and so you've probably seen it around Bozeman, around Western Montana. But it's pretty rare in eastern Montana, and it's definitely declining more significantly in eastern Montana than it is in western Montana. So at that Native Plant Society get together, I was doing a bee survey. I was on my own, I wasn't a part of the group at this point, and I found a western bumblebee. And so, yeah, it was just really exciting to find that observation way far eastern Montana and understand where these bees are still hanging out. Every time you go out, these surveys feel like a bit of a treasure hunt. You never know what species you're gonna find, if there's anything unique or interesting, or how many different species you'll find at a location. So, that was just really exciting to find that bee way far out in eastern Montana.
Nice. Thank you, Michelle. Thanks so much for talking to us today.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and I look forward to that May 7th. You want to repeat that again? The May 7th training, how to access that or sign up for it?
Yeah, so this is a training webinar on Zoom, May 7th, from 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. And to sign up, go to bumblebeeatlas.org and it's posted under the events page.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, have a good summer, and maybe I'll see you in a field somewhere.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Today I'm recording at the stream side in Gardner Park, right here in Bozeman. We have so many opportunities coming up in addition to the Bumblebee Atlas training. And here's a little bit that are offered this week. At the Museum of the Rockies, you can go to museumoftherockies.org for their calendar to find the details on these two things. There's going to be a lecture on May 5th, and the time will be 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. and that is titled To Use One's Voices, Unique Advocacy Services for MMIP with Haley Omisu. I hope I'm saying her name right. Anyway, MMIP is, as I understand it, missing or murdered indigenous people. And then there's another lecture coming up Thursday on the 7th, at 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m., and that is going to be titled, What Dinosaurs Can Teach Us About the Evolution of Modern Avian Reproduction Systems, with Dr. Jason. I'm not sure if that's his whole name or not, but anyway, as I said before, you can find more information on those lectures and other activities at our beloved Museum of the Rockies at their website, museumoftherockies.org. And then sacagaweaaudubon.org, you can go to that website, and they have several activities listed. The soonest one coming up, I think, is their annual meeting and potluck, which is May 11th at Hope Lutheran Church, 2152 West Graff Street, Bozeman. And they say, please join us for our annual membership meeting and sweet and savory potluck. A main dish, plates, and utensils will be provided. Bring a sweet or savory dish to share. Your participation in this annual Sacagawea-Audubon Society membership meeting and board of directors election is requested and highly valued. Sacagawea-Audubon Society is among the few remaining local member-driven environmental not-for-profits. All of you, as members, make it what it is and determine what it will become. And then following the potluck and board elections, they have a presentation by Montana Wetlands and Waterfowl with Mark Mariano, and it's called The Last Best Flyway, Conservation in an Unexpected Landscape. And also on the sacagaweaaudubon.org website, you can look at their April newsletter, and if you go down a little ways on that newsletter, there's a link to birding classes with Ashley Martins. And they say, deepen your connections with birds this season with a class or two with our local educator, Ashley Martins. You can contact her at truenatureed@gmail.com if you have questions. And just one example coming right up is a class on cavity nesters. You can learn about and delight in the woodpeckers, nuthatches, and others who excavate cavities, and those species who use them again. That classroom session will be Wednesday, May 6th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. And then they have a field trip on Saturday, May 9th from 7 to 10 a.m. And for members of Sacagawea, the cost is $55, and non-members, it's $70. And she has more workshops coming up, so you might want to follow up on that. Or like I said, you can contact her at truenatureed@gmail.com. And if water is your thing, you can check out the GallatinWatershedCouncil.org website and volunteer with us to that page on that website for ways you can volunteer and learn a lot as you do about our local streams. They always have some really nice projects going on. Our music today is a wetland serenade from Beloved Mountain. Thank you, Beloved Mountain. My thanks to Red, Blue, Black, Silver, and to Ken Lane for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. And I appreciate you, the volunteers, supporters, and underwriters that support KGBM. And KGBM celebrates its 8th birthday on Monday, May 11th. And if you missed the Give Big event, you can still send a birthday donation to the station at kgbm.org. And I'm wondering, how do you find grounding these days? I'd love to hear about it. Leave a text or voicemail for me at 406-404-6246. This program broadcasts on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio Replay episodes are archived for you on the kgvm.org website. Watch those skies, stay well, keep doing good things, and sweet dreams. I'll see you next week.
Thank you.